welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Billy, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing very, very well. Long time no see, but how's things?
Yeah, good. Very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure less has changed my end than it has your end over the last few years. But seeing you feels like it hasn't been that long since I last saw you. So I don't know. Have you had your hair cut? Your hair's shorter now.
There you go. A little trim. Lost a bit of weight. But we're all good. A lot's changed. But now, still the kind of same things.
It's genuinely nice just to chat to you. I'm looking forward to the conversation. But obviously I can't be completely like my own self-interest. We're going to get some stuff like this for other people as well. But you know, you've been working overseas now for how long?
Just starting my second year.
Your second year. Okay. So like, you know, and obviously we'll talk more, but I know you from the work you did at Wickham before you went abroad, and the wonderful work you did there. And we had you on a podcast. I think it was like episode, I can't remember which, 51, something like that, I think it was. Way back now, talking about how you use language and props in your coaching. And I've seen you coach lots of times, and you're fantastic. My boys loved you coaching them. So I'm intrigued to know like whether you're doing the same things and different or whatever else. So we'll get into that space in time. But just as a starting point, if you don't mind, Billy, a bit about kind of maybe your background before you went abroad and then kind of what it is you're doing now, if that's okay.
Yeah, no worries. So kind of way back when, I began coaching about 10 years ago now, I think. So back in college, back in sixth form, without a real purpose of getting into it full time. It was just a case of I enjoy playing football. I don't really want to do anything else. So I'm going to just give coaching a go. Did my level one and two. Didn't really enjoy it. I was really within myself from quite a shy teenager. Got the opportunity after sixth form to go to America for 6 months and do the holiday camps and work with rep teams over there, which just the light bulb kind of went off, and that was it then. I was hooked after connecting with kids over there. Then got back, had no real plan of what to do. I was about 19 at the time and just kind of floating all over the place. Managed to find some part-time coaching. Started with Wickham Wanderers, where I was at for about 6.5 years. But within that, while I was part-time there, I was doing two or three other part-time coaching jobs at the same time. So pretty much leaving at 7 a.m. and getting back at 7 p.m. nearly every day, getting changed in the car. Some of the kind of character building areas of working with like multi-sports, doing like little kicker sessions, doing like community coaching. It was like a full range and variety of things. Then got to a point where I got offered a full-time job at Wickham as a delivery officer, basically just committing to them in terms of doing their after-school clubs, their elite development sessions where I met you and met your boys, Lucas and Marcus. Then within that, got promoted to doing a senior delivery officer role, which I led like birthday party programs, Saturday morning programs, match day experiences. Then got another promotion just after COVID to do Premier League Primary Stars, which is like an education provision, more so going into schools, working with targeted groups, whether it be like maths, English, PSHE, and then doing some like teacher education, so supporting teachers in their PE delivery. So that was a real step out into left field. Doing year two maths and then doing nursery PE was interesting at times. So did that for about 18 months, and within that was on my UEFA B license. So I was with a non-league team, so working at step five as a first team coach. Really enjoyed the experience. It was really stressful at times because results weren't often brilliant, but found a really good group of guys to work with there and really connected with the club. And then finished then, got to a point where all of a sudden, it's a funny story how the UAE came about. So I've been in the UAE for just over a year. How it came about, I wasn't really looking for a job at that point, really. I was quite happy at Wickham, and it was just one of those times, just around Champions League final time it was. And on Twitter, I don't want to deviate too much, but on Twitter, I every good. Now and again, post, like,
I'm hooked in the story. I don't know this, so tell us.
So on Twitter, every now and again, I post like session plans and post like whiteboards and all this sort of thing. I should do it more, but I did it at the time. I was quite frequent. And one of these boards I put up, I have to try and find a tweet somewhere, but it blew up. It went everywhere. I think it had like 20,000 impressions or something like that. I was buzzing. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Fame at last.
phone was going nuts. And one of the people who liked the tweet was one of my colleagues now, a woman called Mary, and she liked the tweet. And I saw it pop up. I saw the company pop up, and I was like, oh, okay, interesting. So I like messaged, went back and forth, just asked a couple of questions. Oh, like how do you do things? Da, da, da. We just got chatting. I didn't think much of it, just thought of it as like, just chat and just find out a bit about a different part of the world. And then about a few hours later, my now boss Seth, he sent me a DM and was like, oh, we've seen you on the social media, seemed like someone who would suit our organization. Would you like to have a chat about it? So I was like, yeah, go on then, let's see what's about. Just have a chat. Spoke to him, really connected with him. A lot of what they deliver really aligns with my own sort of personal values. So then he asked me to have an interview, had a chat with the team, did the interview, and there's like 10 of them on the Zoom call and just me. So it's it was one of those ones I kind of took it as a free hit at the time. So I didn't really feel too much pressure, but then as soon as I saw the 10 faces looking at me, I was like, oh my God, I better be right here.
Better focus now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should have practiced.
Oh my God. And then started talking to them, had a little bit of a laugh and just kind of was myself in that sense. Cause I felt a bit relaxed as a bit of a free hit, but got to know about me. And then they offered me a role, and then I thought, you know what? This is a good opportunity to just try something different. We come to the end of the school year and stuff. So I thought, yeah, you know what? Let's give it a go. Then handed my notice at Wickham, which was like, I'd never done that before. And it was just like such an emotional time. I was just like, oh my God. But yeah, managed to get through that process and then come out here last August. And it's been a whirlwind ever since. So now my role, I started just as a coach, going and doing schools programs, our squads, doing our like foundation, like recreational side. We used to run the largest youth league in Abu Dhabi. So we'd help organize that, do the day-to-day stuff with that in terms of being on the pitches, setting up pitches, referee management, parent management, carnage. but then now this season, I'm schools coordinator and lead coach and do a lot of things within like coach education, bit of teacher education, and then links with one of the professional clubs out here with one of my programs. So it's been a wild ride, but one I wouldn't change.
Well, like you've squeezed a lot into 10 years. Isn't it funny how like, I guess even without like a defined path, you're just busy following the next step, like left foot, right foot kind of thing. And then you end up in Abu Dhabi doing stuff that you probably never dreamt maybe just even 2 or 3 years ago you'd be doing.
Yeah, crazy. I think it's one of those ones where when I was 19, when I went to America, I come back and I was like, I want to go again. And then found Wickham, fell in love with it, with the people I was with, fell in love with just the people I'd be coaching and all that sort of thing. And just got sucked into it. And that was my life for like every day for about 6 odd years. Then this opportunity popped up and it was just more like go on it. You know what? Let's just take a punt and let's just have a go. Had the full backing of like my colleagues at the time were like, yeah, go for it. Yeah. And then my family were really good with it. And then all of a sudden it's just worked out. It's really, really good.
Well, we'll come on to the other side of that, I guess, in a bit, you know, maybe like the personal side, that's what you like, because we can talk about the football a lot, but you know, there is an emotional thing. See, like you say, it doesn't just affect you, does it? It affects family, friends, and you know, this is a big deal. And like, you can always come back, obviously, but you know, it's easier said than done in the sense of just, you know, the turmoil that it creates when you do these things. So, but look, Billy, fair play to you. Like when, you know, it was great having you at Wickham because you were a fantastic coach. My boys loved you coaching them. And I know that they weren't the only ones, like everyone loved you having it. And I didn't think we'd see you leave Wickham, honestly, I didn't. But it's nice when people move on to things and, you know, you've found new challenges and new opportunities. And, you know, I'm excited to talk a bit more about that. So that's kind of the plan for the next half an hour or so, to chat around kind of what you've picked up while you've been away. Is that all right?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, awesome. Well, look, I think, again, you know, we did speak before about, you know, your coaching methodology, if you like, and your approach, and I've seen it in practice. And I always thought it was a little bit different, a bit quirky in a really cool way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you were the one that would turn up with random different shaped balls and different games to play and stuff, and have different terminology and language, which is great. But just before we get onto kind of, you know, what you do out now, has your philosophy changed at all? Is that the same Billy now, or have you got a different way of going about things?
I tell you what, I think my kind of character is very much the same. I feel that is something that's very quite steady. I feel like someone who kind of cares a lot about who I'm with, like learning names and trying to connect on the kind of personal level. I think my sort of delivery is, in terms of my how I project it, it's very similar. Where I'm working now, I've been really good at just allow me to be myself. So it's one of those ones where it's been really good to be able to go and continue to try these new different things. And a lot of the things like the different shaped balls and stuff are still making an appearance every now and again.
I'm pleased to hear that.
It's always good. that was one of those ones where I did it at the time without really too much thought into it. But then since one of the things I've done since being here has been, I've really focused on like my planning and my research. I've done a lot of like reading, a lot of looking into like different like academic papers, really like keen, but like looking at these different things. And a lot of it, like especially with the different shaped balls and stuff, I've learned a little bit more about differential learning, which is like how it links. So I kind of stumbled into it when I was at Wickham and kind of did it. I was like, oh, let's give it a go. But then now there's a little bit more reason behind it, which has probably informed me a bit better.
Yeah, go on. I think that's part of the journey, Billy, isn't it? Like, you know, a lot of it at first is kind of almost like gut feel or copying other people's stuff, isn't it? And then suddenly what you realize is actually if I research myself, I can then, you know, I can build on my gut feelings, but actually with some kind of maybe some validity behind it, some kind of almost things that I other people are doing, so it gives me more confidence. Is that what you found?
Yeah, I think so. I think I saw what I'd like before would be more the case of seeing things online or seeing other people do things and go, oh, you know what, I quite like that. I might steal that and try different things.
Yeah.
Now it's using those ideas I see from others as well as the things I research and do myself to then piece together to go, actually, the reason they're doing this is because of this reason, not just because it looks fancy or it's quite fun to look at or people buzz off it. It's actually, there's a little bit more purpose behind it. Yeah. So that's been a lot of my planning and a lot of my thinking now has been is more deliberate, where sometimes before it was just to be random for random's sake. Yeah. So I think now it's a bit more kind of focused on that side of things now, which through like my design or through, I think philosophy is adapted slightly. I think I still have how I view the game, how I view football as a whole. What we do now, which we'll get into a little bit later, is blowing my mind. To be fair, like our technical director, Maxi, is just like, his football brain is ridiculous. His experiences have been crazy. He's worked with all these different types of players in these different environments, and we're just kind of playing with his brainchild a little bit. And it's just like every time I speak to him, I come away going, oh my God, my brain is hurting. But it's challenged me in lots of different ways, which has been really good, especially around things like perception action and thinking about like choice, like the decision making and your scanning and the real technical details that go into the layers before you act and before the technique, which has been like, fried my brain at times, bless him, but he's been top.
We'll unpick some of that stuff if that's all right. Just so the role you do now, and obviously you said that you kind of do a few things. Do you work with particular age groups or is it across age groups, and how much of the role is actually coaching and how much of it is doing other stuff?
Yeah, so my role at the minute is my groups I lead are under nines, under 12s, and under 14s, which is good to have some variety. Last year I was mainly under nines and 10s, but then this year I've been able to luckily get a bit of a variety in the other age groups, which is good. My delivery, which is good, which is a lot more just being out and coaching and being out with different groups. There's a lot of, because we're quite a small team, there's a lot of planning, a lot of preparing, a lot of meetings. My boss wouldn't like me saying, but lots of like things where we're doing a lot of different things. So like we had the league, we have other people in the organization doing things like Special Olympics. Then we have things like, we have different like under eights festivals. We have like school events. We have like all these different things that we just have our name in. That we have like just things in the summer, like people, like groups going to Ghana. We've got tournaments in across the world.
Wow.
It's just like lots of just everyone's kind of has a little bit in something, which I don't know, it kind of keeps things fresh. I think if it's just, you're just going to stay working in this one school, then this one age group across the board, and you're not going to see anyone, it's a bit like, actually, a bit of the variety. It's almost like variety is the spice of life, isn't it? And
yeah.
I think sometimes we're in the moment at times, you might think, oh God, I've got to go do this, got to go do this. But when you come out of it, you think, actually, you know what? There, some of the variety is actually what keeps things fresh and keeps things exciting.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's been really good. And then now I've got a bit more responsibility with our school's programs, kind of developing curriculums and supporting coaches, and then going into schools and kind of implementing those things to align with the rest of our programs, which has been a good thing to get my teeth into. And now we're just about to begin really the first term of it. So we'll see how it looks, and see if I still have a job at the end of the year.
Yeah, if all that work's paid off. Yeah. Well, with the 9s, 12s and 14s then, how much time would you get to spend coaching them a week? Is it like a session a week, a few sessions a week? How often do you get out with them?
Yeah, so we get two sessions a week and the game on the Sunday, which is a little different to what I had at Wickham, where we had maybe one session or two sessions a week in games in half terms.
Yeah.
So it's been really good to have training linked and kind of with a purpose towards a game, and then kind of reflecting on the game and then the rest of it. So almost having a bit more of a getting to Sunday morning, and used to get there at 6:30 in the morning to set up pitches, but you're up out of bed and you're fresh and you're ready to go because you've got football to look forward to. So it's been really good. We get like maybe 3 hours in the week, so up to 1 hour and a half sessions, and then games on a Sunday, which has been, it's been really nice, and a lot of contact time with the players, which is good.
And these would be in the evenings when the children have finished school, is it?
Yeah, in the evenings, when it starts to get a little bit cooler. At the minute, it's like today's session, it was, I think it's about 41, 42 degrees by the time I was setting up, which is, and it was really
definitely not Wickham
today. No, God, I don't even worn a coat in about 6 months.
It's already getting cold, and we're just in September. Brilliant. Oh, great. Thanks, Biggs. That paints a picture then of kind of not, you know, you and kind of, you know, what you're doing and stuff. Just on a more broader scale kind of thing, what's the coaching environment like over there in Abu Dhabi? Like, you know, how different is it to maybe what you experience in the States, or obviously what you know very well back in the UK?
It's growing, I think is the word for it. It's growing in competition in terms of, if you're looking at organizations, there's lots and lots and lots. Like, it's like where England, you can find a coaching company or a football club on every corner. It's growing into that at the minute. Dubai is probably stronger, about an hour up the road. That's probably stronger in terms of ability and things like that. But Abu Dhabi's on the rise. It's so, so multicultural. You've got, like, for example, just within our team, I've listed them here. We've got a Kenyan, we've got a Ghanaian, an Indian, Egyptians, Syrian, Irish, and English in
Brilliant.
A small team.
Yeah.
And across the board, you've got coaches from all over the world. You've got players from all over the world. Like, again, for example, if I had one of the groups I can think of from last year, I had Irish, Australian, English, Korean, like Emiratis, suppose from the UAE. Literally, it was just like like Spanish speaking. It was like a full broad scale. So that's been really interesting to see, and just how everyone kind of interacts as one. There can be one thing with it. It can be a little bit too competitive, especially when you get to the league. I guess I've not really ever had that experience of youth grassroots league football. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Through my old job was very go and play another club, friendly games, scores aren't kept, shake hands, go home. Now that we have the league and things, so sometimes we have games where you get your league deciders, and then your parents on the side are very, very keen. Coaches can be a bit keen, which can be a little bit difficult to be quite stubborn on the kind of development process. You almost have to now take kind of make winning is important, don't get me wrong, but it's not the most important thing. So it's just trying to continue and remember that as you're trying to navigate your way through the carnage at times, which can be the league days. But it's like, I find it similar to the UK in terms of there's some really, really, really good stuff going on. There's things where you look at and think, oh, hang on a minute, I'm not too sure about that. But everyone's got, it happens with everyone. I think even some things I do, I kind of after a while go, oh, you know what, I'm not sure about that. When you kind of evolve and think about it. But it is what it is. It's everyone's got the right intentions. Everyone wants to play the game in different ways, but it's just how it's almost plenty of ways to skin a cat, as they say.
Yeah. And it took us a long time, I think, in the UK to get the foundation phase in a place where it probably is kind of fit for purpose. And I think back just 10 years ago and, you know, the coaching that was going on just where we were wasn't great. And I was part of that. it wasn't, you know, we had a lot of stop, stand still, a lot of cues, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think now you look at coaching, you know, I think it's improved a fair bit from what I can see. Kids have a ball each. There's a lot more high ball rolling time. Do you know what I mean? A lot of more stuff. Is that the same over there? Is the foundation phase quite strong? Is your, you know, your next lot of under nines that are coming under six, are they doing the right things at under sixes?
Yeah, I think it's in a place where give it a couple of years and I think it will grow into that. I think there's still a bit of a blend of the old school line drills and your stop stand stills at times. But it's just trying to, I think with what we're doing, I think what we're doing, if I'm being biased, we're very progressive and thinking very ahead of where we are now. And it's just trying to see the cycle and just try and push through to the point where might not have brilliant results. You might have a bit of backlash from parents and might have a bit of backlash from other clubs. But if you continue doing what you see, and we see the end goal is brilliant, but it's just trying to push through to that end goal. And to be fair, there's a lot of clubs doing a lot of good things. Don't get me wrong. But like you said, you could ask someone from another club. They might think what I'm doing is nonsense. You might ask another club, and it's always going to be like that. But to be fair, I'll give people credit. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on, and give it a few years, and I think it'll be a really good hub for football.
Well, I'm sure that when you sent that tweet out, that got all the attention that it got, and then you got the contact from Mary, and then spoke to Seth. I would imagine, having like known you, that they would have picked up a similar thing that I think anyone gets to spend time with you would pick up, and that's that you are the kind of person that would adapt to situations and, you know, listen and learn. I think that comes across really evident, which is probably why you've done what you've done. How have you had to adapt since you moved to Abu Dhabi? Like, you know, how have you had to change your coaching and pick things up and learn and develop? What do you think have been the biggest things there that you've had to kind of deal with to still be effective?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones where I think I'd love people to be a fly on the wall when we, like I said about Maxi, for example, and just listen to him speak, because I think he'd be brilliant on this, because where you want maybe an hour episode, you might get three. He's just like so enthusiastic about football. It's really good to hear and be a part of. So I think he's someone who drives us to keep going. So in terms of adapting my coaching, we have a lot more of a focus now on how players can take control of their learning. It's funny enough, actually, I think you had Mark Bennett on the show recently. Yeah. The model he speaks about is the lot of, like, the model we do. So when you had him on, then he was talking through things like that, like in terms of like success criteria, like the UAEs and things like that. I was like, oh my God, like we do that. And I could picture it. And I was like, yes, I'd like someone else is kind of on that same wavelength. But a lot of the things we do are around the players managing their own state, managing other players around them, and kind of having a bit more of a collaborative approach to learning. Like, they set their own success criteria compared to what we're focusing on. We have our behaviors. We're very behavior led. So like, we players before anything are focused on the idea of being ace. So showing attitude, concentration, and effort in everything they do. And that's like the benchmark. So you ask any of our players, kind of always hammering that home, and if that's not right, then nothing else can kind of progress. And then you're now trying to get them to manage others in that and dig each other out or support each other in those senses. A lot of the understanding, like I said, about like perception action and focusing on what to look for and how like scanning is crucial to decision making and choice making, that's a really big thing that we just want our players to be very aware of what's going on around them and what to look for, and to the choices they're making, like making things with the right intentions, rather than things like kicking a ball aimlessly or that sort of thing. And also, I think my session design has simplified massively. I feel I've really stripped back from trying to like land planes on Terminal 4 on the edge of my pitch with 100 cones. I've really tried to.
You did like a cone, Billy.
I loved a cone for a while, especially flat ones, and don't add it all over the place. But I feel now like my sessions are very. They look a lot more like the game. Even if I'm doing things like 1v1 plus ones, it still looks like the game. You've got goals at the ends, you've got opponents, you've got there's more constraints, there's more kind of peer interactions, and it's a lot more trying to find ways to how can I bring the practice and make it look as much like the game, no matter what context I'm looking at, so it's kind of easily transferred.
Yeah,
but not often getting it right. But that's the idea behind it, where I can try to. That's the way I can think. How can I make this link as easy as possible so that they can recall it on a match day?
And just language and culture. I mean, have those things been an issue, or has that been okay?
It's been all right. Like, English is very widely spoken. I've had to pick up a couple of Arabic terms for when we talk to referees, like you're like hakam and all that. I know that one about referees.
It's not a swear word, is it?
No, it means referee. I'll save the swear words. But a lot of it is just like very much because we're very multicultural. Like, now it's a case of just like maybe trying to connect with players by maybe learning one or two words in their language. Like, we have Spanish speakers. Like, my missus is Korean, so I'm learning a bit of Korean at the minute. Right. And we have a couple of Korean players within our groups. So every now and again, I'll give them, annyeonghaseyo. Yeah. And then the parents are looking at me like, what? How do you know that? Little things are just trying to just find ways to connect. But to be fair, across the board, English is widely spoken everywhere. So that transition has been just quite smooth.
Yeah. What surprised you the most about maybe culturally being out there? Is there like, you know, the difference between coaching back in England and coaching out in the UAE? Is it like anything that's you weren't expecting that you suddenly kind of thought, oh, I didn't see that come in, but I'm dealing with it?
Less so on the football pitch, really. I think once the session starts and once the game starts, it's the same,
right.
which is nice. Like, it's kind of anywhere I've been. It's once it's football, everyone speaks the language of football.
Yeah.
So you can almost kind of, whether I use certain terminology, the game is the game, and people understand it. People, you can get things set up, and it just looks quite similar across the board. I think culturally, I find this is like it's the safest place I think I've ever been and ever lived. It's like across the board, it surprised me massively. Just like, you go anywhere, you're not feeling the thing of checking your shoulders, you're not at night time, you go for walks, you're not thinking like someone's going to come and see you. But it's like, really, that side of things then settled me down when, as soon as I moved in and was going through the process of like getting everything set up, like, but I just found the area is just so well kept. It's on the, there's lots of things going on, it's on the rise, and it's just, that's the big thing, it's just so safe and relaxed, which has then led to feel like I could put more focus into my football without having to think, oh, what's happening? If I left my door unlocked or my car unlocked, oh God, I better go check on it. But usually it's like, my colleagues can get footballs out, forgot it was unlocked, got to the car, no one's bothering you. Everyone kind of keeps to themselves, which is a nice, relaxing feeling.
Oh, look, absolutely. Look, I guess, you know, it's brave enough when you relocate and start again somewhere else, you know, and the quicker you can feel safe and at home, I guess the quicker you can concentrate on doing what you want to be doing. And it's great that there you found that. So thanks, Billy. I appreciate that, because it's nice to get an understanding of kind of, you know, what you've learned and how it's gone and how you've adjusted. You're obviously doing various things in your roles, but if it's okay, we're going to kind of focus on the football bits of it and the coaching side. Can you talk us through like a typical Billy coaching session now? What would that look like? So if you've got, say, your under 12s out for one of their two sessions a week, what would it look like? Would it be the same? How would you start? What's the middle bit? How's the finish? Just give us a flavor of that.
Yeah, so typically a session is like an hour and a half. So at the minute, so we start with like your rival activities as they arrive. Typically it'll be things like 1v1s. I like throwing in every now and again like Wembley singles, because I don't feel they get enough of that, and it's quite a nice little different, they call it English goalie here, which
do they?
I don't know, when I started talking about it, I was thinking, what's the English goalie? Then I see them playing it and I was like, oh, it's Wembley or World Cup or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, so they like that when you throw out, oh, we're just playing English goalie. They're like, yes. And they get it set up and they play. Then get them in, set the learning outcomes. That's one thing I've been really big on is I used to love the use of my whiteboard, but now I've really refined it to now be a bit more clear and on what are we learning today. And then ask maybe some like recalling from previous sessions or maybe asking questions or asking players to recall things in different ways. It might be to draw what does a 1-2 pass look like or to write down like a spider diagram, keywords for how might you protect the ball, for example. And we also, one thing we set is compared to what we're focusing on is a non-negotiable. So ask the players, what's one thing we're all going to commit to showing today? They talk in their mini groups and then they choose one thing surrounding our topic. So let's say the topic is today we did, or like this week we didn't escape with a dribble or pass. And they might say as a non-negotiable, they say might have to scan for a defender. So you go, okay, we've all committed to this. Now, when we get into the activities, now can we, if you're not showing this, then it's now up to you guys to manage your own behaviors and manage your own state, or manage your teammate to make sure they are sticking to what we committed to. So we've set that right at the beginning. And then I know Mark spoke about the UAEs. We would set them alongside our learning outcomes, so our success criteria. So unacceptable would be, is unacceptable all the time. Acceptable is acceptable all the time. So it might be linked to your non-negotiable. And then exceptional is something that could happen some of the times. Kind of like your almost some of like, like learning objectives. So once that's all set, at the minute we're beginning to do things like scanning activations to get players into the habit of scanning, to then build over the term to what are we scanning for, when might we scan, the different types of scanning and all that sort of thing. So that spends about 10 minutes doing that. Then our main practice in the first session is like a technical session. So almost like an introduction to the topic. So we do it in small-sided form. So in a technical session, it might be, let's say, escape with a dribble or pass, and you play 1v1 plus one, and you might have three of those games going on the same pitch. So at the minute, I quite enjoy the design of a pitch with end zones, with a halfway line running right down the middle of the pitch, separating the pitch left and right.
Yeah.
So we'll play 1v1 plus one, and it might be dribble into the end zone for 1 point, first touch into the end zone gets you 2 points. And if you can play the ball through and receive in the end zone, like an offside line, get 3 points. And then depending on what we want to look at and what we want to just drop in just to see how to get on, it might be things like with the end zones, you score, you keep the ball, go the other way. Or if you score, you keep the ball, but you must start on the other side of the end zone. So there's a little bit of rotations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If we're looking at managing the ball, that might be a design that I do a lot. So the design is the same, so players can get straight into it, but I'm now going, actually, instead of focusing on protecting the ball, we're now looking at escaping with the ball and just kind of changing what they focus on, because they'll still use the skills and the what we've been looking at in every session, but you're just highlighting the focus onto one area.
Yeah.
So that would be the technical session. Then we'd end the last half an hour with small-sided games. So if we have the capacity, we'll do the format for that group. So under 12s at the minute is 7v7.
Yeah.
So we'll go into 7v7 game, like two coaches put their groups together, and we might put constraints on the game. So like today, we did the constraint. We had the three zones on the pitch, and we did, if the ball is in your defensive third, you only have one touch or three or more. To then think about committing to stay. If you bring the ball and control it, you're committed to staying on the ball and driving to commit and pausing and attracting defenders. Or can you have a quick look and look, find a teammate, find a little gap, and can you maybe speed the play up first time? And then the second session would be very same set out, but instead of a technical practice, it would be a skill practice, as we call it. So more kind of match-based, where you'd have 1v1 plus ones in a technical practice, but now you might go into 2v2 plus two, or 3v3, or 4v4, whatever, and link the link the topic to the game a little bit closer. So that would be really how it would look. If I was, that's what I kind of did with my under 12s this week, or what I've with the Skeptics with a dribbler pass, what I'm going to deliver with them next week. But then the constraints could be changing, but very much that sort of arrival activity, the activation, then adaptation, then application is almost like the order that we go into.
So you've got your two sessions a week with the age group. So then the bit that would change really is technical bit would become more of a skills-based bit. So you kind of, I guess, expecting them to have the foundations, they can do a bit more in that second part of the session. Is that right?
Yeah. So almost a lot of what we do and a lot of what I do, and I guess the group as well, is it's very kind of opposition-based and kind of interacting with the opponent.
Yeah.
So the first part will be the complexity of what a 7v7 might be for a player who might be not quite as advanced. So you want to go strip it back. Your choices are either to beat the player 1v1 or to share to the free player. So then they're getting the repetition without repetition of the actions that we want them to try and learn. And then the second session will be, you might start with that practice just as a reminder and a bit of recall, and then dip them into more interactions with teammates and defenders to see, right, when these moments aren't happening as frequently, can we still bring them to life and can we still look for opportunities to do them? So it almost looks, that's almost the thinking behind it. It's almost build up. So almost like our block is almost, it's like a 3-week block per area. So like, let's say the younger age groups is managing the ball and managing space are the two headings. So we might do 3 weeks on managing the ball, 3 weeks on managing space. And then between them will be like a covert recall week. So for the two sessions that week, coaches step right back and the players will have the opportunity to, we can see what they recall without being prompted, how they interact with each other. Do they use the terminology that we're trying to use? Do they notice the same things that they've been doing for the last few weeks? And then that then informs the next 3-week block. How can we now, what am I doing more of? What am I doing less of? What do they pick up? What are they struggling with? And then you can refine yourself as and when in that sense. Yeah, I've waffled on a little bit. So hopefully there's
no,
been
not
a bit
at all. No, like it's fascinating because obviously you see it, you know what you're doing. But I think for me and for listeners, I know just getting a flavor of it and trying to visualize it as you're talking, like it's great to hear because I know there'll be things people saying, actually, yeah, we do a bit of that. And oh, actually, that's a great idea and a different way of kind of approaching it. And I guess the other point to this is you're talking about the sessions. And like you said before, at Wickham, the games weren't as frequent, were they? You'd have them every half term or so, and it wasn't really the big part. No one expected to go to games necessarily and see a team clicking together because they didn't play an awful lot together. They did, it happened, but it wasn't like, that wasn't, we were going for individual development as parents, I think, with our children there, and the game things were just an extra kind of bonus. But yeah, it's different for you now, right? The games are important, right? And people will want to win the games. I know we can get carried away, but I'm pretty sure you're under 12, so want to win every game they play, and so will their parents. How does that impact on this then?
That's been the big thing, yeah. Yeah, so it's a lot of it's now trying to, I think, manage expectation for one. And I think there's a lot of one thing always, like parents, we have some really, really good parents and they're really involved in what we do in terms of supportive and things like that. It's just trying to just continue to push the message out of actually, yeah, winning is important, but it's not the most important thing. And what we're doing there is a process to it. So as an under 10, you might not see success immediately, but when you get to under 14, the things that you're doing day in, day out here at these small age group, the younger age groups, when you get there, you might notice the fruits of your labor a little bit more. But I think then when it comes to what we do in terms of how the training links more now to the games, players I feel are connecting more with what we apply to them, because we see now there's a direct feedback of what we worked on, maybe staying on the ball under different pressures. We get to the game and you're smashing the ball off the pitch every 2 seconds. We kind of go, actually, there's a disconnect here. And we can see that kind of more quicker than rather than, I mean, I loved Wickham and love what they do. But sometimes when you get to the games, you've worked on so much in 6 to 8 weeks that you get to the game and there's you're looking at things and the players, there's a lot to analyze. And you might think, actually, they're not getting this, this and this, but they did it 6 weeks ago. So they might not remember it. So I'd like that's the thing with it with them and the quality that Wickham do. I'd love if they had like a play games more
Regular
frequently
games
because those
program,
players where they're where they sign it, players are getting signed left, right, and center. And the players I like remember coaching back in the day, and they've gone on even better than what they were before with the guys there. But just if they had that little bit of more consistent games, I reckon they'd be through the roof from where they are.
It's hard,
But
isn't it?
yeah.
Because you can't. Obviously, got a certain setup that works for them. And I know what you're saying. And you're dead right. But I guess from a coaching point of view, it's hard, isn't it? Because you want to see the games of the test, aren't they, to see kind of what's working and also give the players a chance to practice it and fine tune some of these things. And without that, it's a lot harder for you coaches, isn't it? It's a lot harder to get, teams playing collectively when they train maybe a lot more than they actually play. So I don't think it's unreasonable for coach wanting to have more games. I think that's absolutely fair.
Yeah, 100%. I think as coaches, I've this year or the last year has really been a learning curve for me of preparing for a match day at the youth level. I've done like the non-league where it's you're going for 3 points and every game you go out is always preparing to win. And now we've got the players that we've got in now, you want to manage their expectation because obviously as a coach you want to win games. Like
Yeah.
it's I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to win games,
Of
but
course.
it's now trying to go, actually, you know what? Like, how can we prepare these players appropriately? So if they're doing all these things that they're showing so well in training, that we get to the game, it should be the easy bit. That would be the ideal world,
Yeah.
where training's the tough part, and then the game they come in and go, actually, oh, I can relax a little bit now because we've been working harder than the game is showing now. So it's a transition to begin with of being like making sure that we're continuing to rotate players, rotate positions, give equal minutes to all of our players. That's the non-negotiable. But now trying to think, actually, how can I best support you if you're a player who's low on confidence, but we're now playing against a team who's flying? How do I manage? How do I kind of support you and play you in certain areas or give you certain responsibilities to kind of bring the best out of you? And I think when we said about players setting their non-negotiables in sessions, we do that on a match day as well. So it's consistent throughout. So they know players go, oh, you know what? Like we're almost in charge now of what we agreeing to. So almost if the game goes Pete Tong and we lose 6-0, the players might come in and go, actually, look, you know what? We were all acceptable today. We were scanning for a defender and a teammate.
Yeah.
We were acceptable. So they almost go away going, you know what? Like I achieved something. Obviously, if you get the win, it's even better, and you go, yeah, buzzing.
Of course.
But like, you almost now have the you'll get we're getting the players to just understand now, actually, wins happen, losses happen. You can be on the top of your game and lose, and you can be shocking and win. That's football is a strange game like that. But if you're continuing to do the right things and focusing on trying to be better and achieving, I guess, doing the best with what you can with what you have at the time, then over the long run, then you'll see improvements, which has been quite rewarding to see in terms of how players interact with each other and how connected players are to coaches and how parents are to what we do. And it feels more like a you're almost like a family is a really corny, cliched way of putting it, but like you have times where you have disputes and have like disagreements, and whether the players, parents, coaches, all that, there's always like friction at times, but
Like a
everyone's
family, isn't
yeah,
it?
exactly that. And you're always pushing all in, but you're all pushing in the same direction and you all have the right intentions. So I
I
think
mean, that's
that's
the most
where the
important bit, isn't it? When you've got that joined up
that's
kind
it, yeah.
of objective. You mentioned a couple of times about non-negotiables. I think, and that is very much Mark Bennett stuff, but it's great. And I actually having agreed non-negotiables for specific sessions in relation to what you're doing, both in training and the matches, is fantastic. Do you share the match ones with parents? Would parents know what the players are working on before the game? Or is that something you kind of agree just before kickoff? And, that's you and the players kind of stuff. I'm just trying to think, because what you've done is and this is not easy to do, I know this, and let's be honest, it only goes so far. But you're making it not just about the result, aren't you? You're saying, okay, the result's a result, and we've got to deal with that. But actually, we can win in other ways as well here. Another way we can win is by doing this. And I can see how that has an effect, especially if it doesn't go so well with the result. You've kind of got some success still. Are parents brought into that at all?
Yeah, so in terms of, I'll give an example as to one thing I did last season. So, I love a whiteboard. I take it
You've
everywhere.
got the best
And
handwriting for
even on
whiteboards.
it,
That's why, Billy, you write so neatly, you could get away with it. Some of us can't write like you write, so we have to be careful
so I have to
or
try and show it
spell.
off on every occasion I get.
It's
So yeah,
exceptional.
so we I've really tried to make it even better now. So I have to show you a board recently.
All right, I want to
I'm
see.
buzzing with
Yeah,
it now.
I don't
If
know how you can
I say
improve
so
it. Okay, I'm
myself.
intrigued. Yeah.
But yeah, so with the whiteboards, I always write on the match day whiteboards. I go, what one thing are we all going to agree to show today? And they'll get together, they'll discuss it, and then they'll have one thing written down. Then you go, right, how are we going to achieve that? And then they write the UAEs. And then after that, they go, before the game kicks off, maybe 5 minutes to kick off when they've decided, it'll be like, right, okay, right, take the board, couple of you, go to the parents, go and show them. So then a couple of them get up. Firstly, like first time you have to nominate people at times because they'll be like, oh, I don't want to go to my parents. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But you then but you get a couple who kind of go, yeah, I want to do it, I want to do it. So you get them, go take them over. Sometimes they might talk the parents through it, but a lot of times it's just the first time it's the parents were kind of like, oh, okay, cool. But then like because we did it consistently, they start to go, oh, okay, and start to maybe take photos of the board or maybe kind of look at certain things. And then you might even every now and again hear a parent kind of applaud something that we agree to. So if a kid has chased the ball and like try and win the ball back and they've done it, you go, oh, well done for chasing the ball. And you go, oh my God, like
It's working. Yeah.
it's a bit,
They're
yeah, it's
seeing it
kind
like
of
we're seeing it.
seeping through.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's one of those ones where it's football takes control of everyone in different ways. And you're trying to just football's about the kids. And we want to just try and continue to push that to the front of people's heads. So then when you get to games, it's less emotion behind, oh, he's letting a goal. Oh, he's conceded a penalty. Oh, he's scored, but it's offside. It's now actually, oh, you know what? Like they're working towards something. And I see that my kid is actively trying to work towards this outcome. And if they can get near it, then you know what? I appreciate the effort towards it and the intent.
Yeah.
So that I think, yeah, to answer your question, the whiteboard has been really useful in that sense, and the players and the parents I've spoken to are really it bought into it, and they really enjoy that idea that they're more connected with what their kids are doing rather than sometimes the stay on the outside of the Astro, don't even come and talk to me.
Yeah.
Gonna try and work on just the kids here. But I think having a little bit of that interaction, I think, is important because parents have they have every right to be involved. It's just how involved is the million-dollar question.
Definitely. And having the ability to kind of realign their focus away from the result, you're never going to get people not caring about the result. But if you can make it about something else as well and involve them, well, I think that's like a not an over difficult kind of trick, but it's something that I think if more coaches could do it, especially in the grassroots space where it gets a bit crazy around some of the results, if parents can buy into actually, do you know what? Yeah, we want to win today, but actually developments in there, we can win in other ways today. If coaches, it's time well spent, I think, if you can do a bit of that without overcommitting to it, and that's obviously what you're doing there. So thanks, Billy, because we've not really spoke about it too much on the podcast before, and it's you've raised a good topic there, or subtopic, I guess. Do you have a curriculum? Obviously a season-long curriculum. I know you spoke about your 3 week blocks there, but how does a season work? So if you're starting off now at the start of a season, do you plan out what you're going to work on between now and the end of the season, or is you just looking at 3 weeks at a time and then you're seeing what the players need and going again?
So we have our kind of topic headings for the 3 week blocks. So we have like managing the ball, 3 weeks, managing space for the younger half of our program. Then the older half will have control possession and intelligent defending. So we'll work on each for 3 weeks, a 12 week block. After 12 weeks, the coaches will rotate. So we'll go and work with a different group, which is I think is a really good thing. One to kind of keep things fresh and for the players and for the coaches. And just gets you, if it works right, then the coach you've had in the first term, the second coach who comes in, you're just building on the good work they've done. And then by term three, you're building on what two coaches have done.
Yeah.
And if everyone's pulling in the same direction, then you've really made progress. And it gets us to find and recognize and working with all these different players rather than just having one group and saying, this is my under nine group. It's now a case of actually, this is our under nines. Or this is two coaches have worked with them before. I'm now the third. How can I now benefit these to then prepare them for the next coach to come along? So a lot of what the rotations really helps with what we do because we're all bought in and all pulling in the same direction in terms of a syllabus. Our main thing really is to what we call develop the ice player. So intelligence, which is like our perception, character, which we spoke about managing ourselves and managing others, and then excellence, which is the being ace side of it. So showing attitude, concentration and effort at all times, and doing the best with what you have in the moment. So developing the ice player is like the banner at the top of the roots on the tree, if that makes sense. Yeah. So very much that is quite cyclical in terms of you come around every 3 weeks to a different topic. So you're really hammering home the kind of the key areas in terms of what we're looking at and managing the ball and what we look at and managing space. And then when you get the games thrown in as well, we're really giving the players a real comprehensive program that will support them as they go through their football journey and develop almost those fundamentals of, am I comfortable with the ball? Am I aware of what's going on around me? Can I make effective decisions? And am I a good teammate and ultimately a good person for society if football doesn't ever go my way? So I think it's one I've bought into and dove headfirst in over the last year, and I'm even still trying to work it out at times to make it even better for the players I work with. But it's been a good journey in terms of this curriculum.
There must be so much learning for the players and the coaches, but so much learning for the players in having that rotation with coaches, like, because I guess, you know, you have to kind of adjust yourself as a player, don't you? You get a new coach, you've got someone different to speak to, someone different learning. I mean, there's so much value in that beyond just the football itself, you know. And I think it's nice to have a team for a season and stuff for a whole year. And there's lots of value in that, don't get me wrong, I'm sure. But I love the idea of having maybe 12 weeks with one coach and getting another pair of eyes on the player and as the player as well. Even if they love the coach before, it must be good for them just to have to adjust and deal with things. I can see so many benefits in that.
Yeah, 100%.
Very
and
good.
I think I don't want to name drop him, but he's I've got to talk about him. So at the minute, so tonight's session I had under 13s and 14s, and my partner coach is Titus Bramble, who used to play in the Premier League, played for Newcastle. He's gonna love I've name dropped him, by the way. But it's funny to it's funny to see if for 12 weeks a kid works with me and a parent sees me, and they might have a perception of me before they even meet me. They think, oh, this is this young English guy, da, 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 da. But then they see Titus, who is the nicest person on planet Earth. He's such a top bloke. But they see him, they go, oh my God, he's played here, he's done this, and they've done this. And the players almost think, oh my God, like I'm getting so much kind of from him and all of his experiences and his sort of mentorship and things. Then they get me, who throws a tennis ball into the small side of the game. They think, oh my God, what a contrast to but I think definitely the coach rotation is such a powerful thing, just for the sort of the values that we embody as staff and what we want the players to embody in terms of like the spirit of football as such. But we want to I think getting the players more connected with the whole coaching staff. And like you see, as they come in, they're fist bumping every coach as they come in, and as they leave and they pass a coach, they'll give them a fist bump on the way out. No matter if they're worked with them one term or they've seen them all the time, it's like a really nice, it makes it a really nice environment where you then just start to get to know everyone and they start to know you.
Well, I know you're saying a bit tongue in cheek about you and obviously Titus, but and different maybe playing backgrounds. But you make a good point again, Billy, because the reality is, and I'm sure that he'd say it himself, you know, there's going to be loads of qualities that you will bring from your experiences and your understanding of the game that will benefit the players, as will his and his background, right? And, you know, on face value, you might be thinking, wow, that's amazing. This guy's got a rich history playing like the elite football and stuff like that. But actually, that doesn't necessarily always make them the best coaches. I'm sure he's a fantastic coach, by the way, but it doesn't actually make them the best coach. There'll be other things that they were done outside of the game, and there'll be things that you'll come with, like with fresh eyes, that are different, that'll add value too. And the players have an opportunity to experience different coaches and different coaches' background, I think, is where the real value happens, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think having the wide range of experiences like Titus can draw from what he's done and what he's worked, who he's worked with and the managers he's been under and the different coaching setups he's been inside, I can then draw from, I might see what he does in a different lens. He might look at what I do and go, actually, have you thought about this, this and this? And then you have it's just, I find that's what I said right at the beginning, like our kind of coaching discussions that we have kind of behind us after a session or in like a meeting that we have or a training we do, we just have so many different experiences from people from all over the world and all over different parts of football. Like there's a few English lads in there from some of the guys from clubs up north, and then we've got one of the guys who was working with pro teams in India. Then we've got a couple of Egyptian lads, and then we've got like Titus's experiences, we've got Maxi's experiences. There's just all this knowledge that just piles together, and everyone's got strengths in different areas. And now we're all trying to just maximize their strengths and nick something from them and steal a session from this person. Or this guy's used a really good keyword that I'm going to take that. I'm going to use that myself. And I just find that environment has really helped us all grow, which is then ultimately going to really help the players as well.
Brilliant. Well, Billy, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much. Look, a couple of last questions, that's okay. There'll be people listening to this. You've probably got them excited about, oh, I could go and do that. This sounds great. What would be your tips for maybe coaches that are thinking about going overseas to coach? What would be some tips or advice, or from your experience, what would you suggest?
In an honest opinion, I think if it's something you want to do, I'd say just take it on. There's no kind of better time than now. The more you put it off, it will never happen. So it's like one of those ones where you say, oh, Monday I'm gonna go to the gym, and then Monday comes, you go, oh, next Monday. But if it's something you want to do, if you enjoy traveling and you enjoy sport or teaching or anything like that, I think going abroad to do it is such a fulfilling experience. I'm just looking through some of the notes I made for this question, and it's quite deep actually. But I'm going to touch on it anyway because it's kind of authentic.
Please,
So it's one of those ones where I wanted to go back abroad after being in the US, and then spent all my time at Wickham talking to the likes of like Andy or Lewis there or Ashley there or Kirk there, and just talking to them. Actually, like one day I'd like to go back and do something like that. And whilst I've got no real attachments, or I've got the freedom to go, actually, you know what, I can just get up and go. And then this come about, and I was like, you know what, let's just dive in. Obviously, starting in a new place is really stressful. There's lots to consider that you don't consider before, like bank accounts and cars and all that sort of stuff. It's just a long old process. But once you kind of get your feet under the table and you get settled, and luckily the guys who I work with, a lot of them I consider like friends outside of work because we just spend so much time together and they've helped me so much. I had quite a bad spell actually. I was in January. I had emergency surgery, so I had like a kind of colon resection. It was like a bit gnarly. So I was out for about in hospital for about 8 days, and then off work for maybe 3 4 weeks. So that was quite a tough period, but luckily I had a really good support network, and they really kind of helped me through that experience, especially being away from home. I was kind of like literally within going for lunch, and then within 2 hours I was in hospital, and then 24 hours I'd had like a meter of intestine removed. Not to get too graphic
Wow.
like,
Was
but
that January just gone?
yeah, so end of January. So it's like
Right.
a so literally it's just been like a that was a real crazy period for that, all sorts of stuff. And yeah, so like now the kind of backlog of that, like I'm fine. I just lost a ton of weight. I didn't have much to lose in the first place, but I
Was going to
lost
say,
like,
Billy, you could,
yeah, it was like I lost like 12 kilos in about 10 days.
Wow.
So it's
Okay.
like, so then it was a case of right now I need to kind of build back my energy, and like I'd go back to coaching and go back and assist for 45 minutes. Then I'd have to go sit down, or it was a long process. But like now I'm like kind of as I was before, just with a like a cesarean scar. But yeah, so like that sort of thing has been,
Did it make you want
luckily
to come home, Billy, during that? I mean, that's a big test to go through. Was there wobbles there? Were you thinking maybe I need to back home now because these things make you, or were you settled enough at that point that actually, do you know what, you just had to get through it and you were fine?
yeah, I tell you what, I didn't feel like I didn't feel that way of wanting to go back.
That's a good test, isn't
At
it,
which is
really?
yeah, it's a real like at the time it was because it happened so quick, and then all of a sudden the kind of hospital period was like just focus on just getting through the mini checklist you have to kind of get out of hospital, and then coming out of it was there's a few tough times, don't get me wrong,
Of
but
course.
like I've got a really good support network around me. Like my missus has been, I'll give her a shout out, she's been unbelievable in my kind of recovery. Then like my colleagues have been really supportive, and like Seth was really good with me and kind of allowed me to kind of have the time to just get back on my feet. And I just think, yeah, that, and that just kind of, I think now, if when I look back on this experience in the UAE, for example, that's like now a big like bookmark in the chapter, and kind of almost the before and after. But no, I think to kind of go, I think that then you, I wouldn't have had, I mean, I think the connections I've made and the experiences I've had, I wouldn't have had them if I just stayed comfortable and stayed in my comfortable setting of, I know I'm going to be going to this school in Chesham at 8 o'clock. I'm going to stay there till 4. Then I'm going to do a under at 7 session at 5 o'clock. And then I'm just going to chill out. And then on the weekend, I'm just going to go see my mum and dad, or I'm going to go spend time with friends.
Yeah.
But then now it's like, actually, like, you know what, like tomorrow, for example, I've got meetings in schools, and then I'm going to go and I'm trying to get good at golf now. So I'm going to go and smash a few balls around and get frustrated at that. But now it's like a case of just, because I decided to go with my own kind of personal values of, I don't like standing still. I like trying to go and try something new, or I like going and doing a new experience, or whether it's in work, I like to try and push, I say push the boundaries is really cliched, but I like to just try and nudge things forward and just try things and make a mistake and jump on it again. And I think coming out here and doing this experience has now helped me fulfill that side of my life of, now can I push on and do, now I can, I've shown I can do this. Maybe another day I might do another country, or maybe another day I might do something else, or I feel like I can go and do those things because I've had this experience. But long story short, I said, if it's on your mind, go for it. Why not?
Well, that was my next question, Billy. What is next for you? Like, I mean, obviously you're happy, you're settled, you're doing some wonderful things where you are. I'm not saying it has to be like next week, but have you got any kind of plans, aspirations, or are you just doing Billy style and just left foot, right foot, and see where it all unfolds?
Yeah. I think a little bit of that. I think in terms of now, I'm really happy here. I feel really settled. So I definitely think for at least the foreseeable, I'll be here. Hopefully, kind of growing in my coaching. Hopefully, do things like the A license at one stage, or like start to build towards those sort of things. Just trying to just become the best version of me, really, whether it be kind of off the pitch, on the pitch. And I guess if you asked me this question 2 years ago, I think you did ask me this question 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I'd never had the answer I have now. So I think having that open mind to that, whatever will be, and kind of where whatever kind of happens, I'm ready for it. So I'm kind of just, like you said, just going to take that sort of left foot, right foot approach, and just whatever happens, happens.
Well, let's not undersell the fact that the reason things did work out how they have for you is the fact that you were being generous enough to share your ideas in a public platform, right? What you put on Twitter wasn't you showing off about stuff. I know you well enough. That's not your style. You were putting things up there to help people and to share practice and to put ideas out and see if people could pick up on these things. And it was through you being selfless in your actions that have got you where you are now, Billy. So I'm so pleased for you, because it was a loss. I know it'd be lost to the Wickham family. We know that. It certainly was a loss to the parents who had lucky enough to have you coaching their kids. But when it works out well, and when it's deserved, like it's so much was for you, it's so nice to hear. And I'm really grateful for your time, Billy, today, and for you sharing your story with us.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Really enjoyed being back on.
Well, we'll get you back on again. There is one more question, which I can't let you go to answer. I can't remember what you said last time. I should have listened to Jack, but I can't remember. I'm sure we would have asked you it, but I can't remember what you said. But we do ask all our guests, if there was one thing they could change about the world of coaching or football, what would that be?
I think it will link to the sort of sharing of ideas. I think, but I've thought about it a lot, and I had this conversation at work the other day, and I think it's a really important thing. So I think coaches should be more collaborative on both the good and bad they deliver. I know, like on Twitter at the minute, you've got like Sunday Share, which is really good. But I think you see just a lot of the best side of people, which I think social media just is just see the best side of people. People only post their engagements or their birthdays. They won't really ever post about, actually, I've had a really bad day today. But I think that would be sort of the more vulnerable side of coaching, I think, is something that I wish we had more of. So seeing someone or hearing someone go, actually, I went and tried this, but it didn't work. And then the reflections based on those sort of feelings, because I think it's very and I've been guilty of it. I think I'm still guilty of it at times. It's a very ego driven area because everyone thinks they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I've very quickly learned that what I know is very, it's like a divot in the mountain of football. And I think having that sort of vulnerability to go, actually, you know what, that didn't quite work out for me, but not just saying, oh, that didn't work, but going, actually being a bit reflective and going, oh, maybe it was because of my demeanor, it might have been because of how I explained things, or maybe because it didn't suit the players I had, or whatever it might be, because coaching is not perfect. Like everyone has a stinker, everyone has a bad session, everyone has a just one of those days, one of those weeks where just things aren't just going for you. I just think if I could have one thing that would be in the world of coaching a bit more, is people being brave enough to share the vulnerable side a little bit more. I think that would allow people to get a real sense of who people are really behind the X's and O's and behind the cones and whiteboards, and see that, you know what, everyone's, you're just people who are trying their best. And I think the quicker we get to that point, I think parents will appreciate the work that people put in, especially like you volunteer. I'm very lucky. I got a job in football, but people who put their time to away from family events, away from seeing their kids grow up, to look after other people's kids, you can actually see, you know what, this person is had a tough day at work, but he's still on the pitch at 6 o'clock to look after your kid and give them a good experience. Even if he's not feeling the best way, or he's not delivered the best session in the world, you actually, you know what, this person has tried their best. So I think the kind of more vulnerable side of coaching is something that I would like to see grow.
Love that, Billy. What a top answer that is. And we've asked that probably 100 times and not had that as an answer. And you're saying it sounds obvious as a thing to suggest, but people don't do it, do they? And what difference it would make? My problem with that one is if I started tweeting all the stuff that I do wrong, I'll be tweeting 30 things a day. But I'd have to limit my how much I do share. But you make a really good point about that, being vulnerable and being honest. And it's certainly a craft, right? And any craft, you know, it's never going to be perfect. And share the stuff that doesn't go well, it probably has as much value, or if not more value, than sharing the stuff that does go well. So brilliant, mate. Top answer. Billy, if people want to find out more about you, the work you're doing, or reach out to you, is that possible? And if so, what would be the best way of going about it?
Yeah, so on Twitter, or I guess X as it's now known, at Ready Billy, I'm going to try and be a bit more productive and proactive on there, just putting things out for people to steal ideas from, or to batter, as social media is like a lot of nowadays.
Yeah.
I think that's one area I want to try and be a bit more frequent on. LinkedIn as well, Billy Ready on LinkedIn. Again, same there, just to try and share ideas and just share thoughts and try and interact with more people, and just try and better myself, and hopefully get people around me thinking a little bit, because yeah, I don't have all the answers, but I'd like to.
Well, mate, you have lots of answers, and you're clearly learning as you go along. You're in a good environment where you are now, good people around you, which is the best place to be, I think, in any career, but particularly in coaching, right? That helps, you know, you're developing, which means your players are going to develop. Mate, would you come back on and do a hat trick with us at some point in the not too distant future and let us know how this season pans out?
Yeah, 100%. Be well up for it. That'd be really good.
Top man, Billy. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure speaking to you again. We'll put your links in the show notes. People want to do reach out, they can find your Twitter handle and your X handle and whatever else in there. So you may get a few direct questions, I don't know. But thank you so much for your time today, mate, and great to chat to you.
No, it's been great to catch up. Thank you for having me.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.